Welcome to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by Tamplay Suites, Waco Northeast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by Tamplay Suites, Waco Northeast. This episode is another edition of our Lost Interviews series, featuring material from TCU football greats Davey O'Brien and Kai Aldrich. Both men played on TCU's national championship team of 1938. Davey O'Brien won the Heisman Trophy that year. You can see his Heisman Trophy on display at the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. If you've never seen a Heisman Trophy in person, this is a must-see. Kai Aldrich was the first overall draft choice in the 1939 NFL Draft. He was the first lineman in NFL history to be drafted number one overall. This interview material comes from cassettes within the Texas Sports Hall of Fame collection that I've converted to MP3 for the Hall of Fame. This episode will also include memories of Davey O'Brien from Upton Bell. Upton's father, Burt Bell, was the founder and owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, who drafted Davey O'Brien with the fourth overall pick of the 1939 NFL Draft. Upton knew Davey O'Brien when he was a child and has many memories of him that you'll want to hear. There is an especially great story of a meeting between his father, Burt Bell, who was by then NFL commissioner, with both Davey O'Brien and Lamar Hunt. Also included in this episode is lost interview footage of legendary coach DX Bible discussing TCU coach Dutch Meyer. This is really a power-packed edition of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast with history that you won't find anywhere else. I am author and oral historian Jackson Michael. This will actually be one of my last episodes for the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast. It has been a great honor and pleasure documenting all of this important Texas sports history for the past few years, and I'm grateful to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame for entrusting me with this important work. The Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast will still continue under a different host and producer, and you can still find me at thegamebeforethemoney.com. TCU football in the 1930s still stands as one of the greatest eras in the history of the school. The decade started with Francis Schmidt as the team's head coach. Schmidt took over the program in 1929 and never won fewer than 9 games in a season. He led the Horned Frogs to an undefeated season in 1932, and the defense only gave up a total of 6 points in their final 7 games that year. Francis Schmidt gave TCU another 10-win season in 1933 before accepting the head coaching job at Ohio State. 1934 started the Dutch Meyer era of TCU football. Meyer coached 2 of the greatest quarterbacks, not only in TCU history, but in all of college football history, Sammy Baugh and Davey O'Brien. DX Bible spoke highly of Dutch Meyer. Coach Bible knew Coach Meyer before Meyer took the reins at TCU, back when Meyer worked as an assistant coach under TCU coach Matty Bell in the 1920s and as a referee in Southwest Conference games.
In regard to Dutch, when I was at A&M, Matty was the coach at TCU, and his first assistant, man that was assisting him, was Dutch Meyer. And Dutch was one of the finest officials in our conference, always in demand. Matt and I were good friends, And you'd be surprised the number of times I've just begged Matty to let Dutch referee an important game. And he'd hate to say no. So we had Dutch in a number of our important games as an official, and he was one of the best.
When Dutch Meyer was head coach at TCU, the athletic director was Howard Grubbs. Earlier, Grubbs played quarterback for the Horned Frogs in 1929, leading Texas Christian to their first ever Southwest Conference title. Grubbs later became the executive secretary of the Southwest Conference. A celebration was held in Grubbs' honor in the early 1970s. Davey O'Brien spoke at the occasion and expressed his admiration for Howard Grubbs. O'Brien even wore the same jersey number as Grubbs, number 8. In this clip, Davey O'Brien also noted that Grubbs kept a close eye on every nickel spent by the TCU football program and even put players to work in efforts to save money.
When I was a young fellow growing up in Dallas, I had a strong desire to go to TCU. One of my heroes was number 8, Howard Grubbs, who played quarterback for TCU. It was my good fortune to go to TCU. It was my better fortune to have my hero as my freshman coach. And I can honestly and sincerely say that in that year, I believe I learned more football than I have ever learned. And that's not just something nice to say because this is his night. That's the truth. I have never known a better football man that knew more about the game than Coach Grubbs. Later on, he was our scout while we were in school. And believe you me, like Coach Martin said, you better believe him when he comes back and tells you because he knows what he's talking about. I sincerely think that the success of our 38 team was due to the fact that we all played freshman ball under Coach Grubbs. Now, I do know that there have been some stories told, as Morris said, about Coach Grubbs being pretty snug. I can vouch on one occasion that that was true. Mason Main, who's sitting back there, and I worked one year with the TCU team when they went up to play Kansas. But we got a free hotel room, we got free meals, and then we sat up in the press box with 8. About 5 minutes before the game was over, Grubbs called up to the press box and told 8 to put us on the phone. I got on the phone, and he says, "Now look, your trip didn't cost you anything up here. We fed you. Now get down here and help me, because when this game's over, these headgears are $18.75 a piece, and these kids just throw them everywhere." I says, "Come on down and help me gather them up." So when that game was over, I can assure you that Mason and I were down on the field, and we helped gather up some of those headgears.
Although TCU fans were concerned about the future after All-American Sammy Baugh graduated, Davey O'Brien took over and won the 1938 Heisman Trophy. Again, you can see that trophy in person when you visit the Texas Sports Hall of Fame in Waco. Davey O'Brien had an incredible year in 1938, throwing for 19 touchdowns, an exceptionally high number for the 1930s. He led the Horned Frogs to the national championship that year and broke Sammy Baugh's completion percentage record in the process. O'Brien also kicked 18 extra points that year, and with his 3 rushing touchdowns, he finished 2nd in the Southwest Conference in scoring. In addition to winning the Heisman Trophy, he also won the Maxwell Award and the Walter Camp Award. The Philadelphia Eagles selected O'Brien as the 4th overall pick in the 1939 NFL Draft. Upton Bell is here to share personal memories of Davey O'Brien. Upton's father, Burt Bell, owned the Philadelphia Eagles and was later NFL commissioner. Upton himself worked as the director of player personnel for the Baltimore Colts in the 1960s under head coach Don Shula, and later served as general manager of the New England Patriots. Upton is going to share memories he has of Davey O'Brien's career with the Eagles and how O'Brien and his father remained friends, and also that O'Brien was the key to a secret meeting between NFL Commissioner Burt Bell and American Football League founder Lamar Hunt.
He was an amazing athlete, amazing quarterback, and of course, won the Heisman Trophy, was then drafted by my father, as really, I mean, the Eagles were failing at the time, and he needed a box office attraction. And in Philly, that means you might have had 5,000 to 10,000 people. In drafting O'Brien, I've got pictures all over the place of it. He found somebody that I think if O'Brien had continued to play, he would be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was that good. I don't care whether he's 5'7", didn't make any difference. The other thing is they kept the relationship up in their lives. O'Brien left because he wanted to join the FBI. If you could imagine Tom Brady saying, "I'm leaving to join the French Foreign Legion," you'd laugh at it. But he was serious. He had decided that it wasn't so much the Eagles or losing games or stuff like that. In fact, he had one of the great days, the last day of his career. I think it was against the Redskins. But he decided he wanted to go with the FBI. He was really brilliant. Went there and actually ended up becoming the best pistol shot in America. He was that good. And, of course, in 1946, when the gambling scandal broke the night before the game, and it was my father's first year as commissioner, he basically had to settle it that night and suspend one of the players, Frank Philchok, the quarterback for the Giants. He let play in the game. The other guy, Merle Hapes, he suspended. Now, after that, he contacted again. How many years later, Davey O'Brien, he said, "I need for you to talk to J. Edgar Hoover because I'm looking for ex-FBI agents that I can place in every city now to chase down any rumors on gambling, any to finger anybody who might be a gambler that's either hanging around players or with players." And so he was a big help in helping him get ex-FBI men in every city. In fact, my father hired one of them later on, who became the interim commissioner when my father dropped dead in 1959. His name was Austin Gunsell, and he was an ex-FBI man. So then again, we'll go to 1959. That's 13 years later. And in the summer of 1959, Lamar Hunt, a multimillionaire, young guy of the age of 26 or 27, had tried to get into the NFL, wanted to buy the Cardinals. It didn't work out, so he decided to form his own league. And who was his liaison? Here we go again, Davey O'Brien. And Davey O'Brien, I can remember, 1959, I was 20. Davey O'Brien met with my father secretly at a delicatessen in Margate, New Jersey, where we had a summer home. And then met at the house with him, and later on was involved in a very secret meeting between Lamar Hunt, my father, at our home, again, in Margate, New Jersey. It looked like at the time, they met a little bit later on, and it looked like what Lamar Hunt wanted was he asked my father, which is a little known fact, to become commissioner of both leagues, and my father said he could not do it. He said he'd think about it, but he couldn't do that. But Lamar Hunt gave him, with Davey O'Brien, the permission to go to Congress when he was trying to get legislation passed to get the NFL the same deal that baseball had. And he announced in Congress, when they accused the NFL and Burt Bell of monopolizing everything, he announced to their shock that there was going to be a new league, the AFL, and he welcomed them in. So three or four times in Burt Bell's life, Davey O'Brien played that role. Great quarterback, great friend, great go-between, and probably helped save the league after that gambling scandal. So I've got nothing but great feelings about Davey O'Brien.
And you mentioned one other thing to me over the years. You mentioned that Davey O'Brien was the first player insured.
That's correct. Bert Bell, again, and my father was so far ahead of his time in a lot of things. He's the first time that he insured Davey with Lloyd's of London for an unheard-of price of $100,000. And that was a big thing in those days, and it was a great publicity a stunt, if you want to call it that. But he wanted to make sure that they were protected because, in the case of Davey, he paid him for that time a lot of money. This was, in fact, you know, a Heisman Trophy winner, well-known around the country, and he wanted to make sure that if he got injured, that there'd be some compensation. So that's what happened.
When we return, we'll hear stories from TCU legend Kai Aldrich, still one of the greatest players in Horned Frog history. And we'll look deeper into TCU's great teams of the 1930s on the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by Townplay Suites, Waco Northeast.
This is Cliff Harris, free safety for the Dallas Cowboys. You're listening to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast. Enjoy it.
When you come to Waco, be sure to stay at the Townplay Suites Waco Northeast, located just a short distance from the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. You'll start your day off with a delicious complimentary breakfast, and you'll also enjoy the Townplay Suites free Wi-Fi, fitness center, and pool. Next time you come to Waco, make the Townplay Suites Waco Northeast your home base on the road. Welcome back to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by Townplay Suites Waco Northeast. Kai Aldrich played with both Sammy Baugh and Davey O'Brien. He was an All-American lineman for TCU. In 1939, he became the first ever lineman drafted number one overall in the NFL draft. He played one season for the Chicago Cardinals before reuniting with his college pal Sammy Baugh with the Washington Redskins. At TCU, he served as co-captain on the 1938 National Championship team, along with back I.B. Hale. While at TCU, Life magazine called Aldrich, quote, probably the best defensive center in history, unquote. Although Davey O'Brien won the 1938 Heisman Trophy, Kai Aldrich was voted team MVP. Aldrich hailed from Temple, Texas, and described how he ended up playing football at TCU for head coach Dutch Meyer, rather than at Baylor or at Texas A&M. The Texas A&M coach Aldrich talks about is the great Homer Norton. The Baylor football star he talks about is Barton Cook, nicknamed Bocce, who played for Baylor from 1928 through 1930. Bocce, like Aldrich, was from Temple, Texas. Bocce became the first consensus All-American from both the Southwest Conference and from a college based in Texas. Barton Bocce Cook was inducted into the Texas Sports Hall of Fame in 1967.
Dutch recruited me. I was killing termites under a big house in Temple. It was hot, and when he got to come and talk to me, I was so anxious to get out in front of there. And he told me he had a place for me and had a job at a bank. And man, I knew that wasn't a hot job like killing termites. And so I told him I accept the hint. Yeah, so it was a night watchman job at the bank, though I was a janitor to besides a night watchman. So, but anyway, that's being really, Bocce. Come awful close to get me to Baylor. Say, Bocce, was always kind of, I looked up to Bocce. I kind of felt and had great respect and and I thought he was the greatest football player I ever watched when I was a kid. And I used to leave the highway and slip up and hitchhike at the Waco to go up there and see Bocce when he played. And I feel like if Bocce had spent a little bit more time, if he'd have spent a little more time trying to recruit me, they might have gotten me to Baylor, although Baylor was, nobody tried to recruit me any more than Baylor, but they didn't usually use the right man if Bocce had spent more time. But I think Bocce was scared that he didn't want to feel like that he was putting any pressure on me, see. But actually the school I really wanted to go to was A&M, because I had a brother down there I looked up to, and he was a student where I was kind of lazy and hard to keep me on my books, and I figured if I'd go down there, he'd help me keep me eligible. See, and I was wanting to go to A&M, but as it was, when I went down to see the coach, he says, "Ty, I'm going to be honest with you." He said, I want to tell you this. He said, "Son, I haven't been up to see you. I've heard a lot of great things about you. You've been highly recommended to me. But says, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to level with you. I don't think you'll ever be big and large enough to be a college lineman." That's what he told me. Well, at that time, I only weighed 170 pounds. But I'll tell you one thing, I was as big as anybody as far as desire.
1936 was Sammy Baugh's senior year and sophomore Kai Aldrich's first on the TCU varsity squad. Although expectations soared, TCU stumbled out of the gate with a 3-2 start. The Frogs turned things around, however, and went unbeaten for the rest of the year. The late season success resulted in an invitation to the Cotton Bowl, where they faced Marquette. TCU won the game 16-6. Kai Aldrich played a key part on the line, and he considered his sophomore season his best in college and his Cotton Bowl performance his best game.
Well, I always thought the best game I ever played now was the Cotton Bowl game, 1936, when I was a sophomore. My roommate, who happened to be up there in the radio booth checking for the tackles, I guess maybe I got this many, but at one time he said I made 22 straight tackles. So
22 straight?
Yeah.
Who was your roommate? Who was that roommate?
Robert Fort was his name. Oh, Robert, he was, but Robert was checking her, but I... Finally, he said, announce, if I don't tell you, made the tackle, it's this guy did. But I was just that day, we was playing the mud, and I played safe land line most of the time right in front of the center, and he couldn't block my hand. I mean, I just stayed there backfield, go back and check him out, see who had the ball. But really, it was amazing. It's just one of those days.
Sammy Baugh was drafted in the first round of the 1937 NFL Draft. Many wondered if TCU could keep winning. In the 1937 edition of the Illustrated Football Annual, it said that TCU could, quote, skyrocket or may fizzle out before they get started, unquote. It turned out to be the latter of the two for the Horned Frogs. After the first six games, the team had lost 3, tied 2, and won only a single game. Aldrich remembered head coach Dutch Meyer's response to the team's fizzled start to the 1937 season, and how Meyer's dissatisfaction helped turn things around for the rest of Aldrich's college career.
In 37, we went down to play Seminary. And Seminary shouldn't even be in the same ballpark with us. But we went down and they beat us 9-7, because Dutch was mad bad at the first ball club. He didn't even start us. He put us on the bench, and then put us in the first quarter, and we were 7-0 behind, and we never did catch up. They beat us 10-9. And boy, that's the last game we ever lost while I was in TCU. It made our ball club. It brought us all together, the coach and the team.
1937 was a bit of a disappointment for TCU football. But, as Aldrich said, it set up the next season, 1938. Which remains one of the greatest years in TCU football history, as the Horned Frogs were named national champions. In this interview recorded in November of 1980, Kai Aldrich told of a secret pledge the players made with each other before heading into the 1938 season. He thought that commitment played a huge role in TCU winning the national championship.
before we had a good ball club in 37. We was the only team that beat the conference champions, which was Rice, that year in 37. So the following year, we had a nucleus. Our team were about 15 of us were seniors. So we pledged ourselves without even the knowledge of our coach that we all got together and said that we was going to quit dissipating every way and we was just going to have a great year. And as it was, I always said, if you do something, you receive or something. And so, man, we gave out. I didn't see a boy smoke a cigarette or dissipate in any way. Not one during that whole season. And as it was, it paid us a reward. We won the national championship.
During the interview, Aldrich was also asked to name the stars on that 1938 squad.
Of course, we had the leading ground gainer. It was Connie Sports, which was a sophomore. We had, of course, Johnny Hall. Well, he was our great running back. And of course, we had O'Brien, who got the Heisman Trophy, you know. We had I.B. Hale, who had made some of the All-American teams. David and I.B. and myself were, in fact, David and I were census All-Americans, and I.B. made a few of the teams. And we had, I think it's either six or eight boys that won the whole Southwest Conference.
Connie Sparks scored 10 touchdowns that season to lead the Southwest Conference in scoring. His 60 points was more than the TCU defense gave up all season long. The majority of TCU's wins were routs, including a 34-6 romping at College Station over Texas A&M. Although Kai Aldrich felt like the Cotton Bowl his sophomore year was his best game in college, many onlookers declared this game against A&M as his Horned Frog highlight.
But really, a lot of people said A&M game my senior year. When we played the Aggies my senior year was my best game, but I don't think so. I had a good day that day because I happened to catch Dick Todd in open twice in open field. In fact, they said, what time I ran down? But I don't know if I was that fast or not.
For those of you who may not have heard of Dick Todd, for many years, Dick Todd held the Texas high school scoring record and was a well-known player throughout the country. He later became teammates with Sammy Baugh and Kai Aldrich in the NFL. That day in College Station, however, belonged to Aldrich and the Horned Frogs. The New York Times summary of the game noted that Aldrich knocked Todd out of bounds on two long kickoff returns and stated that, quote, Aldrich, the greatest figure on the field, played 58 minutes of spectacular defensive football and was given a thunderous ovation, unquote. You might remember that Texas A&M head coach Homer Norton told Kai Aldrich that he didn't believe Aldrich would ever be big enough to play lineman in college football.
And I'll never forget, though, the last game I played. He walked up and said, Kai, I want to tell you, boy, he says, I'm sorry, I want to say you're the greatest college lineman I ever saw, which was Homer Norton at Texas A&M. And I'll never forget, Homer. It was a great win. I'll never forget the day we played him. I guess that's why I had a good day, because the day we played him our last year, I want him to long remember me, because I wanted to go down there, and he turned me down. Not really turned me down, but he said he couldn't offer me one of his best jobs. See, I wasn't quite big enough.
After the game, Homer Norton was quoted as saying, quote, TCU today had the greatest ball club I've ever seen on the field. Davey O'Brien and Kai Aldrich are two of the greatest ball players I've seen, unquote. Such praise was not uncommon coming from coaches who played against Dutch Meyer's 1938 national champion Horned Frogs. Marquette coach Patty Driscoll, who was elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1965, stated, quote, TCU's passing game was the best we've seen. Temple coach Pop Warner said similar. Texas head coach DX Bible concurred, saying, quote, that passing is the best I ever saw. Rice coach Jimmy Kitts added, quote, that TCU team was the greatest I've ever seen. Perhaps then SMU head coach Matty Bell summed it up best, saying, quote, running, passing, a great line. The Frogs have everything. Indeed, TCU did have everything. The team went undefeated, won the Sugar Bowl, and was voted national champions by the Associated Press. Kai Aldrich was the first overall pick in the NFL draft, and Davey O'Brien went fourth overall. I.B. Hill was also drafted in the first round. Aldrich went number one overall. As of the 2023 draft, he remains the only TCU player drafted number one overall. For those of you who may be wondering, Sammy Baugh was drafted sixth overall. Kai Aldrich told the story of why he thought he was the first overall pick in the 1939 NFL draft, making him the first lineman ever selected number one overall.
See, I was drafted by Chicago Cardinals. They finished on the bottom. They had the first draft that year, and I happened to be the first college lineman that was ever drafted in the Pro League number one. And I really feel like the main reason I was drafted one, they had a fellow, but he was a one-time head coach of Chicago Cardinals. And at that time, though, when he come to see me, he was assistant coach. Motsi Field Handler, it was his name. Motsi Handler. He graduated from TCU, in fact. And he happened to come down, I guess it was during the fall of my senior year. And that day, I guess I was always pretty much of a challenger. And I'll never forget. We was walking down on the field that afternoon, and we had just been named. We just have to be named the number one team. That was the first time we had reached the top as number one rating, and that was about 3 weeks before the season was over. And so I'll never forget when Dutch and I was walking down, walking next to Dutch. I said, Dutch, I said, hey, I said, you're number one, aren't you? I said, Dutch, I'll just tell you. I said, I think I'd go down and select a bunch of nubbins. And I said, I'd like to challenge your number one team this afternoon. I really did. Dutch looked at me. He said, all right, just get you a team. And I did. And not boasting or anything, but we gave him all he wanted. In fact, I think we might have been a little bit ahead of him when Dutch finally broke it up because he got mad at me. He told me I was playing his plays. And of course, I said, Dutch, I know your plays, but I said, I'm not back there in the huddle. And so, anyway, Phil Handler was in the stands. And I guess I wasn't not only my coach that day, because Dutch Meyer, you know, after he graduated, he said I was the greatest athlete he ever coached. So I guess that day I'd already won Dutch over, but I won this fellow, the assistant coach, in the pro ball, because the next year I was the number one draft choice, and I know it was all from that afternoon.
Kai Aldrich had the rare opportunity to play with two of the greatest quarterbacks in college football history, Sammy Baugh and Davey O'Brien. He was asked to compare the two.
Well, I tell you, Sam to me, excelled over Dave, not in passing, not in running, in kicking. Maybe Dave, I'd say Sam was a little better kicker than Dave. But as far as passing and running, I'd say Davis was as good as Sam. Only thing really, Sam had advantage over Davis because of his height and he could see down the field. David needed a little more protection than Sam did. I've seen Sam throwing the ball going backwards and still hitting the receiver downfield. I mean, I never saw such concentration. I even in pro ball, in fact, of course, I played with Sam so many more years than I did Dave in pro ball, see. And I got to know him and respecting Sam more so because I played with him longer. But they were the two of the finest quarterbacks or football players any team would ever want to have, I'll tell you that.
Aldrich was also asked how he was given the nickname Kai when his given name was Charles. The story goes back to his childhood.
It's really very simple. When I was a baby, I cried a good deal. I guess I was hungry. I've always been a big eater, and I guess I was always hungry, so I was crying. But anyway, I had a brother about less than 2 years older than I, and he couldn't call me Crybaby, he called me Kai Baby. And so they, when the years went by, in fact, when I got, I guess, three or four, they dropped the baby and called me Kai, and that's the way I got my name.
He was also asked who he thought was the greatest player he ever played against in the NFL.
Green Bay had a great fullback now, Clark Hinkle. He's the only man I ever played with in all my career that I hope someone else got to him first. I mean, I'd take him with him any time, but that rascal would tear you up, boy. He didn't know how to quit. That's why I say this. Is anybody I ever played against, I hope that someone's get to him before I did. he was tough. Now, he was Clark Hinkle. I thought he was the greatest football player I played against.
When asked to compare Sammy Baugh's leadership with Davey O'Brien's, Aldrich alluded to them both leading by example. He then told a story that exemplified his own type of vocal leadership.
Sam never said too much. David was a whole lot that. David didn't say much, too. Before or after, they done it all they're seeing out there on the field. Some of us, we talked a good game. Maybe we tried to play it, but Sam and Dave, they did. They both played a great game and didn't say too much because they really wasn't the leader. You know, usually the leader voices himself. And that's why if he didn't say anything, how could he lead somebody? A leader is a man that takes charge out there. I always, like I said, I led. I led every team I ever played. I wasn't inclined to lead. It was just my nature. Like, I'll give you an example one time. We was in a huddle and Sam called a play. We come out and this boy next to me, he and I was to block on this man right in front of us. And, man, we didn't do such a good job. This old boy didn't move him. I had to set him up. He was to move him out. And no good. We walked back there in the huddle and I jabbed my elbow in his ribs. I said, boy, you smell out here. And he didn't hit me. I thought I was watching for ready to duck if he hit at me. But he didn't. Next play we called up there and Sam called practically the same play. I guess he knew I was eating him out. Something was going to happen. And so he called the same play Sam did. And man, I'll never forget. I never touched this boy. Oh, Smiley, we called him Smiley. Smiley hit this boy in front of us and I didn't even touch him because Smiley must have knocked him 3 yards. I come back and that little next play and I jammed him again. I said, boy, you smell it better. And I'm just saying that's the type of, you lead a man. I wasn't condemning him. I was criticizing because he wasn't doing good when I knew he could. But after he did good, I patted him on the back. That's the way it was. And I'll never forget after the game that day. He walked up to me. He said, "Guy, if there's anybody else on this ball club, I'd hit him between the eyes." But he said, you know, I said to myself, that's one thing about that old man. He's giving all he's got.
Aldrich added that he was often the leader of virtually every team he played on. He gave a second example of his leadership and told a story about how his pro teammates respected him at the highest level.
One year I went back, the first time in fact, I went back to the Redskins 13 years after I quit playing. A bunch of the old timers, in fact there's about 150 of them there, and we had this party, and I'll never forget, in fact, it was a sports writer there looking for a story the next day, and so he was going around and asking all the players who was the greatest Redskin of them all, and he talked to most all of them. In fact, I guess I was the last man he talked to, and when he walked up there, he said, "I guess you're going to vote for yourself." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "I've just been around to all these players, and they all say you're the best." He said, and I said, I laughed. I said, well, the only way I was the best, I said, I'm the biggest fool. Because I said, I was a fool about the game. I said, man, I loved it. And I'll give you an example. One time we was playing Green Bay. It was an exhibition game. It was our fifth exhibition game. We played five here in recent years. We're playing six, but now they're back to four, I think. But anyway, well, we had five, and it was our fifth exhibition game, and we were playing, having to be playing in Baltimore. Not against Baltimore, against Green Bay. And I'll never forget the half. Those rascals had us 31-0. And we had won the Eastern Division the previous year and played for the championship. And, of course, we happened to lose the game. But anyway, well, we had a good ball club. And I'll never forget that half. We were 31-0 behind. I said, man, I was so shook up because I knew our team was loafing. You know, some of these guys, they play for the money when they're not getting much. Of course, most of the pro
shows, they or their season contract, and these exhibition games, they didn't draw any money, so they didn't put out too much. And anyway, of course, me being a fool, when I played every game alike, I never loafed one down in all my career. I don't say that most of the day. I'm just telling you the truth. And so, anyway, I'll never forget, at the half, see, the coach covered a lot of things, but he didn't really cover what was needed. And, of course, he said we'd make a lot of mistakes, and we were, because our timing was off, because fellas was, they wasn't hustling. And so, anyway, I'll never forget, just when he got through talking, I jumped up, and of course, I had the authority to say something, because I happened to be the captain. But I said, I want to tell you, but you got this wonder something right now. And I said, I don't know what y'all come up here, but I thought you'd come up here to earn a living. And I said, some of you not earn it the right way. But I said, I'll tell you one thing right now. I'm going out to challenge this ball club this next half, and I don't want to warn you gutless wonders to go with me unless you get your guts under your belt and let's go out and get them. And if you think I don't mean what I say, just any one of you walk up here, I'll fry you right now. They all looked at me. Nobody moved. I said, I'm going for them there. I said, oh, let's come on. Let's have some fun. I just challenged them. They all still just looked. And so I just started on the field. Here they come. They beat us 31-28. Of course, they played two halves. We didn't play but one, but we just showed we had the ball club. And I always said, professional ball is about 95% mental attitude. Everybody's, they're supposed to know the game. They're supposed to be pros. But boy, it takes that desire, that get up and get, to really put it to them, see? And so I just want to tell you that's the way I felt about the game.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Texas Sports Hall of Fame podcast, presented by Template Suites, Waco Northeast. We invite you to come to Waco and see Davey O'Brien's Heisman Trophy in person at the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. When you book your stay, make a great play call and book your stay at the Template Suites, Waco Northeast.